Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Thanks for joining me. Coming up today, the Vatican and the Pope pay tribute to Pope John Paul II, recalling the third anniversary of Karol Wojtyła's death. Catholic Relief Services finds reasons for hope in war-torn Gaza, and Pope John Paul II's landmark pilgrimage to the Holy Land. We look back at his words and legacy. Three years ago, St. Peter's Square was filled to overflowing with thousands of faithful, many with rosaries in hand, praying ardently for Pope John Paul, who was nearing his final hour. I remember standing among them, seeing tears glistening on flushed cheeks, being enveloped by a soft murmur, a wave of voices in prayer washing slowly over the darkened square, dotted with the feeble light of flickering candles. It seemed fitting, and perhaps more than coincidental, that Pope John Paul finally slipped away at 9:37 p.m., on April 2nd, on the eve of the Sunday of Divine Mercy, the feast day he had himself established in memory of the wishes of Polish Saint Faustina Kowalska. Well, preparations are underway here at the Vatican to remember the servant of God, Pope John Paul, his legacy, and his path towards sainthood. Wednesday morning at 10:30, Pope Benedict will preside a special Mass in memory of his predecessor, and later that night, the Cardinal Vicar of Rome, Camillo Ruini, will lead a prayer vigil with young people in the Vatican grottos at the tomb of Pope John Paul. The vigil will conclude with a few words by the Pope's former secretary, now Cardinal Stanislaw Dziwisz, who will be following the vigil via Vatican television from Krakow, Poland. Turning to news from the Holy Land, Israel's Defense Minister Ehud Barak has announced he will consider opening the Gaza Strip's crossing if Palestinian fighters there will stop bombarding Israel with rockets. Israel closed the crossing last June after Hamas took control of Gaza. Well, Catholic Relief Services' Tom Garofalo is in charge of the agency's operations in Gaza. He told me the violence between the Israeli military and Hamas over recent weeks has worsened already poor humanitarian conditions in Gaza.
Underlying all that extreme conflict, you have a steady deterioration in the quality of people's lives because of the long-term effects of the closure that has been in place since June 2007 when Hamas took over the Strip. And so the Israelis won't work with them. And as a result, the border crossings are closed. So, you know, you have problematic access of humanitarian supplies, but generally humanitarian supplies get in. The big problem is there is no export income now in Gaza, and all the export-related industries, which are pretty substantial, are pretty much shut down. So you have maybe half the people out of work entirely, and this has really strong knock-on effects on everybody's daily well-being. But really, Israel is letting some humanitarian cases out, which is very fortunate, because there are many things or chronic illnesses and serious illnesses like cancer, which can't really be adequately treated in Gaza. So that is a safety valve for some people. But many of them don't get permits out because of for security reasons or other reasons. So even for those humanitarian cases, it's not easy and something that can't be assumed. Egypt also lets people out occasionally. There were a group of pilgrims that went for the Hajj a while back, and we really need much more of an effort by the Palestinian Authority, too. I mean, it's not just Israel. I think that inside Gaza, if you talk to people, you see that there is room for some kind of functional rapprochement between the factions on the ground. But each of them has their obstacles outside the country, whether it's Iran and Syria or even, you know, the Palestinian Authority itself, I think, doesn't necessarily do everything that it could to facilitate the opening of some of those crossings. And that's unfortunate, but that's the reality.
There have been some very weak signals coming from the Hamas side. Do you see a rapprochement between the two groups?
What we hear is that there have been these overtures, but both sides have really strong demands. You know, of course, the Palestinian Authority wants the Hamas leadership to give up control of Gaza, and Hamas has its requirements of the Palestinian Authority in terms of recognition and bringing them into what they consider their rightful position as the legitimate authority, because they won the elections back in January 2005. So there's still a lot of room between their positions. However, you know, I speak to a lot of people who are at kind of the mid-level of leadership in the Palestinian Authority and still present and trying to function in Gaza. And other sort of reconcilers in the community, whether it be in the religious communities or among just civil society activists who know people on both sides, and they describe a situation where this could really all be worked out. And so that's our situation. We hope for the good of the innocent and the poor in particular in Gaza that something could be worked out with the assistance of some of the big players in the region, like Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, United States and Israel, of course. And I think that, you know, that's something that people are hearing from those countries. And, you know, there have been positive things. Egypt has tried to broker some kind of reconciliation that doesn't include, you know, giving in completely to the other side's demands or accepting everything that they have to say, but just to look at how we can get these crossings open, which is really critical for the good of the ordinary people in Gaza who don't really care about the political positions of these leaders. I think most people that I speak to are disgusted with the leadership on both sides. They think that Fatah did a lot of bad things, and they should have expected that there would be some sort of movement by Hamas. And then Hamas, of course, they don't see them as justified in doing what they have done, and they did many horrible things in their effort to take over Gaza. So, you know, we try to focus on the ordinary people who are not firing rockets. Those people are making things much harder for everybody. They're not achieving anything. It's a, you know, highly immoral act. But most people are not doing that. They're just trying to get on with their lives. And we work with young people who would really just like to have some hope that when they finish their university degree or high school, that they would be able to have a job. And there's a very slim chance of that happening right now.
There are more than a million people living in that very small strip of territory. And at last count, people were earning less than $2 a day. How are they living off that kind of income?
Well, what a friend of mine in Gaza said is that people are eating, but they are not living. And that's true, what you said. People, probably 80% of the people are spending less than $2 a day. And without the massive amounts of food aid that are going in there, they couldn't make it. About 80% of the population are getting some form of food aid. I guess about 300,000 people out of 1.5 million are getting their full ration, WF, World Food Program ration of food. And another 800,000 are getting partial rations from the UN Relief Works Agency, the UNRWA. So that's how people get by. But as I said, it's not really life. It's just subsistence.
I know you weren't there in the year 2000 when Pope John Paul visited the Holy Land. Have you talked to people about the impact that visit had on the people, the local, especially the local Christian community?
It was really a touchstone for the Catholic community and for Christians in general, but it also had a big impact for non-Christians in the region. There are markers and plaques in the places where the Holy Father went and made remarks. Bethlehem University always features the words of the Pope when he was speaking at the Dehesha camp. And the Dehesha camp itself, which is a refugee camp in Bethlehem, they also were, I think, very touched and moved by the fact that the Holy Father would come to them. I think, sadly, the fact is that a lot of the hope that people had at the time of the millennium, because of the papal visit and other things that seemed, you know, things seemed to be going in more or less the right direction, didn't work out, and I think that they feel that a lot of the promise that the papal visit represented was unfortunately not borne out, and there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think, yeah, I mean, whenever the Holy Father goes to a place, especially the Holy Land, it has a huge impact, and I can still see, you know, when you talk to some of the priests that were present then, it's something that does lift their spirits, that they're not forgotten. And that's really important, that even when things get tough, and I think the Holy Father continues to speak out about peace in the Holy Land and the reconciliation, and that shows that they're not forgotten.
Tom Garofalo there from Catholic Relief Services in the Holy Land. We now look back at Pope John Paul's historic pilgrimage to the Holy Land in the year that the Church celebrated its great jubilee. Peace in the Holy Land was always an aspiration very dear to Pope John Paul II, who was particularly concerned about the continuous drain of the indigenous Christian community from the land of Christ's birth. Violence and economic difficulties have forced tens of thousands of them to flee abroad. Arab Christians now account for less than 2% of the population, where once they were a significant minority. Well, few will forget Pope John Paul's phrase, "What the Holy Land needs is not walls, but bridges," that captured the hearts and minds of people in almost every country where people are divided by conflict or hatreds. And in the very land where Christ walked, it was painful for Pope John Paul to see the physical wall of division being erected over the last few years. In the Jubilee year 2000, Pope John Paul finally fulfilled one of his greatest dreams, to walk the path of Jesus in the Holy Land. His apostolic pilgrimage to Bethlehem and Jerusalem was covered by the international media and seen by millions the world over, bringing a powerful message of solidarity with the local Christian community, but also one of dialogue and reconciliation between Christians, Muslims, and Jews.
This year of the 2000th anniversary of the birth of Jesus Christ, it has been my strong personal desire to come here and to pray in the most important places which from ancient times have seen God's intervention, the wonders He has done.
Latin Patriarch Michel Sabah of Jerusalem said the Pope came in 2000 with a long history of good relations with Muslims and Jews and solidarity with the local church in the Holy Land.
So all these factors give him a special solicitude for the Holy Land. And therefore he came as not only as a pastor of the church, religious leader, but bearing in his heart every inhabitant of this land, all the populations, though they are in conflict, but for him in his heart they were not in conflict. For him, he loved the Jews, he came loving the Jews, he came loving the Palestinians, he came loving all the churches, Catholics, Orthodox and Protestants who are here in this land. And it is in this spirit that he delivered all his messages to all. And he was welcomed by all. Despite the word he said to the Jews was very well welcomed. The word he said to the Palestinians as well, and to the churches, of course. And everyone felt in him a friend, a man, a leader, who feels, who cares for them.
A frail and bent Pope John Paul spoke firmly to Israelis and Palestinians, Jews, Muslims, and Christians, of the need for justice and forgiveness for any real peace to take hold in the land holy to the three monotheistic faiths.
My journey, therefore, is a pilgrimage in a spirit of humble gratitude and hope that the origins of our religious history, it is a tribute to the three religious traditions which coexist in this land. I pray that my visit will serve to encourage an increase of interreligious dialogue that will lead Jews, Christians, and Muslims to seek in their respective beliefs and the universal brotherhood that unites all the members of the human family the motivation and the perseverance to work for the peace and justice which the peoples of the whole land do not yet have, and for which they yearn so deep. Shalom.
Pope John Paul had gone to a holy land where a fragile peace still held, the people bursting with a new sense of hope. Hundreds of Palestinians, many of them Christians, had returned home after the Oslo Peace Accords to reinvest in their homeland, building hotels and refurbishing restaurants and shops in expectation of the throngs of pilgrims who were to come to the Holy Land during the Great Jubilee Year. But the peace Pope John Paul had prayed for so ardently was never to come during his lifetime. Just months after his Jubilee pilgrimage to the land of Christ, violence between Israelis and Palestinians erupted once again. Bishop Mark Coleridge was working at the Vatican Secretariat of State back at the turn of the new millennium. He was one of the people who helped organize the papal pilgrimage.
There are two moments particularly I will never forget. The first of them was at the Holocaust Memorial, Yad Vashem, in a kind of crypt, a very dark area with a black floor. And the black floor has on it the names of the death camps, Buchenwald, Dachau, Belsen, Auschwitz, and so on. So the Pope, at one point, having spoken, and with just the light on him, this figure in white, he moved across that dark floor with those dark names on a walking stick. And it was as if here was the Pope of Rome, burdened with 2,000 years of Christian history, which he was, and walking as a frail old man across that floor to greet Holocaust survivors. But somehow the image was more powerful because the Pope was frail.
One of those Holocaust survivors was Edith Zierer. When she was 13 in occupied Poland, Edith was wasting away from hunger when a young priest found her, gave her bread, picked her up in his strong arms, and carried her 25 miles to safety. That priest was Karol Wojtyła. The two met again decades later when Pope John Paul paid that historic visit to the Holocaust Memorial Yad Vashem in Jerusalem in the year 2000.
In the Israeli Jewish society, he made, I think, a kind of religious revolution. In the sense he gave when to the Jewish society, the Israeli Jewish society, when they saw him on the televisions, his figure, the spirit which he was inspiring by his words, by his only face even.
That visit to the Jewish State's memorial perhaps represented the culminating moment of Pope John Paul's 26-year endeavor to bring the Jews, whom he called our older brothers in the faith, in closer dialogue with the Catholic Church. It also came 6 years after the Pope oversaw the Holy See establish diplomatic relations with the State of Israel.
Many things have changed in relations between the Holy See and the State of Israel since my predecessor, Pope Paul VI, came here in 1964. The establishment of diplomatic relations between us in 1994 set a seal on efforts to open a era of dialogue on questions of common interest concerning religious freedom, relations between church and state, and more generally, relations between Christians and Jews. On another level, world opinion followed with close attention the peace process which finds all the peoples of the region involved in the difficult search for a lasting peace and justice for all. With newfound openness towards one another, Christians and Jews together must make courageous efforts to remove all forms of prejudice. And this, at every level of attitude, every level of attitude, teaching and communication.
In his every action, the frail Pope John Paul drove that message across in the Holy Land.
I will never forget, and probably the greatest television image I've ever seen, was when the Pope was at the Western Wall, and he placed the prayer, you'll remember, in the wall, as the Jewish people do. And then, instead of turning away immediately, he simply laid his shaking hand on the wall, and the camera caught the shaking hand of the Pope with the fisherman's ring. And again, it was the frailty of the hand, but the intensity of the prayer that made that such an unforgettable moment and such an unforgettable image.
Praying at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem and following the Jewish custom, he placed a note between the stones in the wall, begging God's forgiveness for the sins of the church against the Jews.
God of our fathers, you chose Abraham and his descendants to bring your name to the nations. We are deeply saddened by the behavior of those who in the course of history have caused these children of yours to suffer, and asking your forgiveness, we wish to commit ourselves to genuine brotherhood with the people of the covenant. We ask this through Christ our Lord.
The act of forgiving and asking forgiveness were hallmarks of Pope John Paul's long pontificate, and he didn't hesitate to urge others to follow his example. For Pope John Paul, there could be no peace without justice, and no justice without forgiveness.
In the Arab world as well, all his speeches in the refugee camp, he touched what is essential in the sufferings of the Palestinians. And he told clearly that these sufferings have stayed too long. Everything must be done in order for these sufferings to stop.
And it was the theme of justice that ran through all his discourses in the Holy Land, especially in his visit to the Palestinian territories, where at the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem, he prayed at the site of the Christ child's birth.
People everywhere turn to this unique corner of the earth with a hope that transcends all conflicts and all difficulties. Bethlehem, where the choir of angels sang, glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among men. Bethlehem stands out in every place and in every age as the promise of God's gift of peace. The message of Bethlehem is the great news of reconciliation among men, of peace at every level of relations between individuals and nations. Bethlehem is a universal crossroads where all peoples can meet to build together a world worthy of our human dignity and destiny.
Besides addressing the Palestinian people, Pope John Paul was speaking to President Yasser Arafat, who accompanied the pontiff on almost all of his stops in the Palestinian territories. The Palestinian president had often come to Rome, seeking Pope John Paul's ear on matters of peace and justice for his people. And in the year 2000, it was his turn to act as host.
Mr. Arafat, as I thank you for the warm welcome you have given me, in the name of the Palestinian Authority and people, I express all my happiness at being here today. How could I fail to pray that the divine gift of peace will become more and more reality for all of who live in this land, uniquely marked by God's intervention? Peace for the Palestinian people. Peace for all the peoples of the region. No one can ignore how much the Palestinian people have had to suffer in recent decades. Your torment is before the eyes of the world, and it has gone too long. The Holy See has always recognized that the Palestinian people have the natural right to a homeland and the right to be able to live in peace and tranquility with the other peoples of this area. In the International Forum, my predecessors and I have repeatedly proclaimed that there would be no end to the Saad conflict in the Holy Land without stable guarantees for the rights of the peoples involved on the basis of international law and the relevant United Nations resolutions and declarations. We must all continue to work and pray for the success of every genuine effort to bring peace to this land. Only with a just and lasting peace, not imposed, but secured through negotiation, will legitimate Palestinian aspirations be fulfilled. Only then will the Holy Land see the possibility of a bright new future, no longer dissipated by rivalry and conflict, but firmly based on understanding and cooperation for the good of all. The outcome depends greatly on the courageous readiness of those responsible for the destiny of this part of the world to move to new attitudes of compromise and compliance with the demands of justice.
Countless are the stories I've heard of Palestinian Muslims who turned out to pray and light candles for the Pope in the Holy Land's churches and public spaces when they heard of his death. In his traditional peace message, Pacem in Terrace, Pope John Paul pointed to the Holy Land as holding the key to global peace on earth. Would that his dream for peace in Christ's homeland come true in our lifetime.
He put his root seeds in the soil of this land. And one day I think peace will flourish. And one of the roots, main roots of this peace will be his speeches and his visit to this land. One cannot say in which lifetime, but we hope that things are developing. There were times not far before the 1988 in which no one, we who live all these sufferings, all these tragedies and so on, we could not imagine that one day there will be talks between Israeli and Palestinians. Then we entered a new phase. Talks took place. Then we are every year or every two or three years, despite all the death, demolitions, etc., ideas are developing.
Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, Michel Sabah, the head of the Catholic Church in the Holy Land, recalling Pope John Paul's lasting legacy to that part of the world. And that concludes today's program. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. Laudator Jesus Christus.